Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up on this Christmas edition of the program, men's basketball with a dominating start to conference play, women's hoops with a couple of rare home games this past week. It's also bowl week for A-State football. Coming up on Thursday night, Red Wolves taking on Bowling Green at the 68 Ventures Bowl in Mobile. We'll talk about the game itself a little bit later on, but this is the first bowl game that A-State has played in Mobile since 2014, and that was the final game of a four-year stretch of playing that bowl game in Mobile. Of course, it was the GoDaddy Bowl back then. And joining us now, the head coach for two of those bowl games, who had a record of 2-0 as the head coach of the Red Wolves in those bowl games. It's our good friend, John Thompson. How you doing, JT?
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing? Merry Christmas.
You too.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you. So kind of go back to those bowl games. What's the first thing you think about? What's the first memory that comes to mind?
Two things, really, I guess, immediately like that, since you just threw that question on me with no preparation. So I like that. I think about how much the players bought in, how hard they played, and how good they were. I mean, good on the field, but off the field. And it was such a team atmosphere, and they bonded. And they were really, really special people, first of all. And then they were really, really good players. And then the second thing is my great friend, one of my best all-time friends, is Robert Spear. How he managed a lot of things. There was a lot of things going on the field and off the field. Robert was right there as a true friend, not only to Arkansas State, but to me, and I'll always be grateful to him.
So all of this stuff, to me, A-State football in the 2010s is still a 30 for 30 that'll be made one of these days. But you guys, you're on kind of the front end of that. It makes a jump from 4 wins to 10 wins that you're not supposed to be able to do. Freeze goes to Ole Miss, and then, you know, when everybody is thinking, well, woe is me, it was fun while it lasted, you pull off hiring Gus Malzahn, an Arkansas guy, who brings you in, you know, as an Arkansas guy as well. I mean, just kind of tell us how it all unfolded, how Gus got you to Jonesboro in the first place.
Well, Freeze and I had been friends before. Gus had called and talked, but actually he had hired another guy, if y'all remember. And then he left and went somewhere else. So I was kind of the second choice there and was thrilled to get back to Arkansas, and especially Northeast Arkansas, from growing up in McCrory and Wilson and Forest City. And so I came back in there with Gus, and we really had a great staff with J.B. Grimes and Rhett Lashley and all a lot of good people. But came in there and we hit a gold mine, because there were some great players and some really stud human beings on that staff. And I tell everybody a lot, you know, they talk about Gus and they talk about Harson and talk about, well, not Harson as much, but Gus and Freeze. Hey, Ryan Applin did more for their career than they did during that time. Well, they were really lucky to have Ryan Applin.
Yeah.
Here's what's funny. Like you just said, well, you know, I asked you that question in kind of typical JT fashion. You're like, oh, you know, I was the second guy. Well, it's 12 years later. We're talking to you, and none of us can think of the first guy's name. So I think it worked out all right.
Yeah, well, it did. I was thrilled. I was thrilled to be at Arkansas State and thrilled to be back in there. And it was a really, really fun time. I look back on those 2 years, and 99% of it was really fun. There's still a little bit of it that sticks in my gut, just a little bit, to be honest with you, since that was a long time ago. But the players, and the really special players, and we'd stay in touch with a lot of guys, and there's certainly an affinity to that group in that time.
I do want to get to the bowl games here in just a minute, but you go back to that 2012 season, your first season at Arkansas State, and it was just such a fun run. And the way that team just was so dominant toward the end of the season was really unlike any stretch of games that I can remember, because of not only this team winning, but winning in such dominating fashion. Of course, it kind of culminated at the end of the regular season in 2012 with that 45-0 victory over Middle Tennessee, and just one of the more dominant performances on both sides of the ball that we've ever seen. And of course, so many great memories of that day, a sellout crowd at Centennial Bank Stadium. But when you think back on that win over Middle, what comes to mind there?
I think so much about even the preparation going into that game, and Nate Harrell picking one off and him pointing up to the press box to the coaches up there, and kind of giving the coaches credit for doing that. I've never been a part of a game in my career where we succeeded in everything that we did. I mean, there was a lot of talk before the game about how Middle was going to whip Malzahn's offense and that we couldn't stop them and all. But no, that was a that was as near perfect game as you can have. It was great. I remember seeing Malzahn after the game, and you know, we kind of high-fived after the celebration and all that. And then I want to say it was just 2 days later, actually, Paul Feinbaum called me and he said, Malzahn's going to Auburn. I said, no, he's not. So that happened real quickly, but that was a great team all year long. That was a great, great team, and led by Applin and Grizz, and you guys get a chance to be around Darian Griswold all the time. But J.D. McKissick and just so many great players, Starson, Sterling Young, Nate Harrell was a leader on that team, though, on defense, and he and Q Lee both.
I don't know if I've ever heard that story, that it was Paul Feinbaum that told you that Gus was leaving.
That's where I heard it. I don't know. I guess he had had my number from my Florida days was the last time that I had talked with him. But he called me, and I was extremely surprised at it. I didn't even know. They had kept that very quiet. We had our head down getting ready for Kent State while that was going on. And then, you know, the part about then Gus is taking part of the staff. Part of the staff is staying and having to keep all of that together, and all the things that went on off the field that could have really ripped that team apart. But our players didn't allow it. I'll always be grateful to those guys for that. They didn't let anything, all the rumors, all the talking, you know, a coach would leave and go practice at Auburn and he'd come back to Mobile and blah, blah, blah. You know, coaches saying this and that. And I'm trying to get the job and trying to win the game. And they're wanting a quarterback guy. And all of that was going on, but it didn't stop us from Q Lee making that tackle on 4th and 8 for the game.
You took it kind of where I wanted to kind of go for a second anyway, because there is 12 years of water under the bridge. So let's talk about that stretch of days for you, everything you're needing or having to juggle, because they come in and say, hey, we want you to coach the team in the bowl game. And obviously that's a huge priority of yours for the guys. But in the meantime, like, you know, you're needing to think about the next step of your livelihood. You just referenced wanting to get the head coaching job. So talk us through that stretch of days for you, what that was like in that time.
Well, it was a little different because I felt like I'd had a year to lay out my resume, to be honest. And I knew the game was important. So I didn't spend a lot of time or not a lot of stress about, am I going to get the job or preparing for the job? I thought that what we were doing and with the team, you know, how the team reacted during the bowl preparation, which was a long time. I mean, we backed it up with the spring game. You play the game in the spring, you know, so late in January. Then when Harsin came in, it was a little odd at that point because he was there. He was hired early. And so I really just had to cut it to, okay, I'm not getting a job. But I've got a job to coach these guys. And he was in staff meetings. He was at practice. He was doing all the things. And it could have been distracting, but it wasn't. Our players didn't allow it. And I said, to heck with it, too. I'm just going to put my head down and coach. If he likes it, he does. And if he doesn't, then I'll go someplace else. But I guess he couldn't find another coordinator, so he kept me on. And, Then happened again the next year. Deja vu all over again. So it still goes back. I'm not trying to say and be anything, right. But golly, what great players, great people. I mean, I can just go over and just in my head and Artez and JD, Chris Stone, man, all those guys.
Yeah, I do want to stay on 2012 here because you mentioned Kent State. That was a ranked opponent. They were ranked in the top 25 when we played them.
Yep. Sure were.
In that 2012 season. So it was a huge challenge. And, you know, we were trying to win our first bowl as an FBS member. It hadn't happened up until that point. So that was a big deal. And all four of those years we went to Mobile, we had huge crowds. But I remember that year in particular with everything that happened. Of course, the win over Middle Tennessee, all the momentum with the program. There were a lot of people that went down to Mobile that season for that game. It was just an amazing game. It went down to the wire. Ryan Applin and J.D. McKissick both had big games on the offensive side. But you mentioned it came down to a fourth down stop in the final seconds of that one. Keyshawn Lee with the game-sealing tackle, and you end up winning it 17-13. And I thought it was fitting that you guys won it with defense. And, of course, Q Lee and you, Coach, have a relationship – a very good relationship to this day, but I'm sure you remember that tackle like it was yesterday.
I can see him coming out. I didn't know he could run that fast. It was a scramble to our sideline. It was fourth and eight. And he stopped him about fourth and five. It wasn't close. I've never seen Q run that fast. And I'm trying right now, and I think it's going to happen. Q's going to be on my staff here in outside of Atlanta where I work. He's going to be one of our coaches, so we're going to reunite that deal. That's a hard-headed son of a gun, though, and he was hard-headed in playing and coaching, and I loved it. I loved it. We can talk about the other game in a moment, some things he did. But, yeah, the crowd, Robert and I went out to eat one night down there. I stayed in my room most of the time, but I went out to eat one night with Robert, and I was blown away with the crowd. Everywhere you turned around, it was red and black, and it was a surreal moment. Being at Arkansas State was really special. Being back home in Arkansas was really great, and it was that was a big game. Kent State was a really good team, not as good as we were that night.
It's KavanaughCars.com, trucks, cars to see, and SUVs. All types are there, rides everywhere. New and pre-owned, they're sure to own.
Just shop online there, you will find your perfect match is always at
home. All types are there, rides everywhere. New and pre-owned, they're sure to own.
JDJR, Chevy, and Lord, Hyundai, Kia, Ford, all you can afford. KavanaughCars.com, KavanaughCars.com, KavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is Demario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Continuing to visit with our buddy John Thompson here on the Second to None podcast, presented as always by Kavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. You won another conference championship the following season. You referred to it earlier. After the season ended, Coach Harsin leaves. He goes back to Boise State, and you're in the same exact spot. You're coaching the bowl game. Kind of take us through that. What was different that time around?
You know, I'd been through it once, and when Terry Mahajer called me, I was on the road recruiting, called me really early one morning, like 5 or 5:30 in the morning, and that was a surprise, too. Said that Harsin was leaving, and would I do it again? Now, I'll be honest with you. I said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it for the players, but I want to be seriously considered to get the job full-time. He said, yeah, okay, we went through all of that. But then that was a, you know, that was an awfully good team too. But no Ryan Applin. I mean, we had Freddie. Freddie was a great player. Freddie Knighton. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, Alan Muse on that team. Flash Gordon, who's probably one of the most underrated running backs that's ever played at Arkansas State.
Without a doubt.
But we did have Q Lee. That was the one that I really thought that over the last couple of years, and I'm just being honest with you, that we played good defense. We held the team together like five head coaches in the last 5 years, some kind of crazy stat like that, and held them together. And they went for a quarterback guy again, and I understand that. I wasn't the AD. I wasn't the one picking the coaches. I was just the one that was trying to do my best coaching, and they went a different direction, and I moved away. That's as nice as I can say it.
So the second time around, you already said kind of maybe different than the first. You made it clear from the get-go you wanted to be considered. Do you feel like you were? I mean, did you get to interview for the head coaching job, I guess is what I'm asking.
Okay, we're turning this into TMZ right now, aren't we?
A little bit.
You know, and I'm fine with it. It was a different time back then. In my opinion, no. I think that Kerry Mahajer, you know, wanted an offensive guy all along. That's okay. That was his prerogative. Kerry told me one day after practice, he said, hey, why don't you come over to the chancellor's office and let's just sit down and talk. I said, is this going to be an interview? Oh, no. Don't worry about that. We're just going to sit down and talk. So I still had on my coaching gear and I grabbed a couple of things. We went over there and then there was three or four people sitting in the room and it was an interview. It was a fake interview. I can say that now. But it really was, I think they'd already had their mind made up that they weren't going in one direction. I don't know if they'd made their mind up again on who they were going with. That's football, that's sports, that's coaching, that's all thing. I'm not crying about it. Don't get me wrong. Do not get me wrong at all. You got to deal with some of that. That's life. That happens. Some people like offense, some people like defense. I was trying to do what I thought was best for the whole program. I think I could have recruited well, get some Arkansans in there, and because I knew the state, I knew the coaches, mm-hmm. that whole deal. So that changed, and Blake came in, and Blake acted like he was going to keep me, and then he didn't. So I went to Texas, and that was the end of that story. So really, I'm embarrassed by saying all of that a little bit. Like, it sounds like I'm whining. I ain't whining. It was a great 2 years, and there's so many good memories that come away from that. I'm not going to let anything destroy that.
Well, and look, we can talk about it now. It is a decade later. And when people mention the name John Thompson around here, there's nothing but good vibes,
right?
Because
right.
What they remember are those dominant defenses in 2012 and 2013. And it's something that people love to look back on. And you're a part of a really, really special part of Arkansas State football history, and I think that's the way people around here look at it, especially when they hear your name. So I can tell, and obviously you're being really candid with us, but you and I have had enough conversations over the years where I know how you feel about this place, about Arkansas State and your memories here, and I know it was a special time in your career as well.
Well, it was, and then I just go back to, you know, it was, but my goodness, man, we had some good players that played hard. You go back and you watch any of the highlights, you look at either one of those years on both sides of the ball. Now, we were really good on offense both years, and that makes you be good on defense also and vice versa. But we had some big, big-time players that, you know, a lot of guys that played in the NFL, a lot of guys that could have played in the NFL. It was a great time. We played good, man. We played good. Now, there were some times that we got whipped. We go up to Oregon, and it was not a pretty thing. Oregon was really good. They had a Heisman Trophy winner that we didn't know about. Fastest team I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
But we got better. We got better after that, and some great personalities on that team. And I love those guys. They put up with me. They dealt with me in both years. And like, okay, we got this crazy guy that's going to be our coach, but we had fun. We practiced well. We prepared well. The coaches did the best they can because they're, and I'm sure it's been documented, heck, they're trying to keep jobs. Some of them are lobbying with me, trying to keep a job, thought I was going to get it. And some of them are out the door knowing I wasn't going to get it. It was an interesting time.
All right. I do want to talk about the 2013 bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
because that was a special one as well. So we're playing Ball State. That's another good team out of the MAC. Your starting quarterback was Adam Kennedy. And, of course, he played just the 1 year here and liked Adam. Did a good job for us, but he was injured midway through the second quarter of that game. Had to go to Freddie Knighton. And, of course, that was the start of a fantastic career for him. He threw the go-ahead touchdown pass to Alan Muse with 32 seconds left. And then Ball State drives back down the field. They have a chance to kick a game-tying field goal and force overtime, but the kick was blocked by Ryan Carruthers. Your team able to hold on and win it 23-20. So when you look back on that game, what comes to mind?
You're saying all of that, and I've got chill bumps sitting here in my kitchen just thinking about that. I knew it was coming down to Ryan blocking it. I mean, while you're talking, I said, we're going to block this field goal. they moved the ball down the field, but I also remember Chico having a late hit. Andrew Tryon,
yeah,
on our sideline, and I mean that was, we get a late hit, and it was a questionable call, but it moved them down closer to where they could get into field goal range. But Don Jones was playing his tail off. But again, Flash had a great game. But I remember the play that, and Eli called the play. I'll give him the credit. Eli Drinkwich was calling the plays in that game, and Eli called hide the little person. Remember that play?
Yeah, we called it something else back then.
Yeah, that's right.
A less politically correct.
I'll stay politically correct. I don't know how to, you know, I don't do that a lot, but it was hide the little person, and it had a big play down there and got the score. But as you go back and you look at that, our guys played so daggum hard, just so hard. And that was a very, very good Ball State team. Very good team. Extremely emotional with our players and with all that was going on. And that was different because I wasn't even sure I was going to coach again. Taking the gear off after the game, I can remember, like, I may not put this stuff back on. And again, I remember Robert Spear being my friend right there at the end and just kind of hanging on. And first game, I stayed out on the field and celebrated. And I don't know if y'all remember, I tried to pick up the trophy, and that thing was way too heavy the first game. And was the girl's name Danica?
Danica Patrick, yeah.
Yeah, and she was there and really surprised that I almost dropped the trophy. But that next year, I didn't do that. I kind of just, you know, said some things to the players and walked on in. And Robert was right there. So anyway, that's kind of what I remember. Thank goodness other things happen, and I still got great memories with those players.
I know technically special teams, but it's still, I mean, blocking a kick seems like a defensive play. So, I mean, it's kind of just fitting here in the grand scheme of things that both of those games you coach in and win get one that a defensive player makes.
Yeah, no question. Hey, and Ryan Carruthers was a stud, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
And then, and you know, he had an NFL career. I mean, up and down the roster, we didn't have any guys that we had to hide, or we didn't have guys that there were matchup problems. I remember in the Kent State game, they had a guy named, what was his name?
Oh, you're talking about the back, right?
Dre Archer against Kent State. He was an NFL guy, and I can remember Don Jones just thumping his head almost every play if he had the ball or didn't have the ball. And late in the game, Archer's got a towel over his head on the sideline. He had opted out. Before the days of opting out, he opted out, I think, about the third quarter, because Don Jones was just drilling him every play, just took him out of the game. And that's things you remember as a coach, and with guys being that way. And that had a whole lot to do with that game, and nobody ever saw it until, well, we knew it was going on the sideline, but you put the tape back on and you see, you know, one play on one sideline and Don knocking Dre Archer out of the ballpark on the other side, legally, but it was good.
Really fun just kind of going back and reminiscing about some great memories as we get ready to go back to Mobile again this week with the A-State football team, just to look back a decade ago at some really, really great moments. And, man, it's fun catching up with you. And I know you referenced it earlier. You're still coaching in the Atlanta area, and you mentioned Q Lee possibly being a part of your staff coming up. Tell us kind of what you're up to these days. And I want you to let everybody know what you did this past weekend for the very first time, too.
I think it's a done deal. But, you know, you never know about these done deals. When you go back 10 years ago, you think there's I thought there was a couple of done deals on that that didn't happen. But Keyshawn is going to come over. I'm coaching at a place called Fellowship Christian. It's a private school outside of Atlanta in Roswell. And we got to the semifinals. A team that had beaten us early beat us again, beat us 24-17. We had more than enough opportunities to get into the championship game, which you get into it, you got a chance to play. So I'm still not over that. That was a little over a week ago. We ended up 10-3. I've been the head coach here for a couple of years. We've been 10-3 both years, been beat in the semifinals both years. But that's a really good thing and enjoying it, and got some things to get better at. But hey, I wasn't as good as you. I went with I had a guy on my back on this, but my son and I, Hayes, my youngest son and I, we went skydiving on Saturday at noon. There's nothing to it. I don't know why people, it's just, you know, you get up there 15,000 feet, you jump out of the plane.
Yeah.
You got a parachute. It was easy, man. It was easy. Just float down. A guy pulls the chute and say, okay, that's all there was to it. That was an entire lie right there. Every experience. When I saw my son jump out of the plane and I'm going, oh my goodness, what am I going to do now? And then they say, we're going. And the next thing, you're out of the plane and you are up there 15,000 feet. I was thinking, like, I thought this would be a whole lot more fun. I know you've done it, and you had a great experience. Maybe this is just going to turn into a great experience the more years that go by before I do it again, and it will be years before. But it was a great time. It's been a bucket list for me, and Lord knows I need to start checking off those bucket lists pretty quick.
And I don't want to, like, this one obviously could peel off into a whole nother deal. But I can't have you here. I just think people would be too interested to kind of hear your take, because I bet you got a lot of buddies in college football who are jealous of you coaching high school football right now.
My goodness. You are exactly right. We had a 5-star left tackle that was recruited by everybody in the country, basically. I mean, really, if you name a school, I mean, that we had all kinds of coaches that came in a year ago and had another. We got a wide receiver that's going to North Carolina. We got a running back and a quarterback right now that are highly recruited. But yes, there are so many guys that come in. They don't know what to do. They're not very happy. It's not, you know what? You go and you have a relationship with these guys, and then somebody offers them $100,000 more. Well, you find out how much that relationship is worth, and you can't blame them. I'll tell this story real quick with Q Lee. I mean, we're playing Ball State and it's halftime. Y'all probably know this. I've said it before. And we're going over an adjustment. We had a defense called Soul Train. We kind of lined them up in the middle and brought pressure off the edge. And it was a successful pressure, but they kept getting the ball out and they were throwing the ball down the field. And Q's job was to go and cover the back, what we call hug the back, come go across the line of scrimmage and get him. Well, we're talking about it and I'm drawing it up and I said, Q, you got to go get this back to. And he says, hey, they're not throwing it to the back. Let me drop. I can get underneath the tight end. I said, you do what the defense is supposed to do. You know, in halftime, it's not kumbaya a lot of times in there. There's a lot of emotions going on at halftime. And Q and I both were emotional guys. And I said, no, you do what your job is. And he said, hey, you want me to be the quarterback of the defense or just do what you want me to do? And I said, you be the quarterback of the defense, make a play. Well, he intercepts. The same play exactly comes up, just like he said it, and he picks it off and returns it to about the 10-yard line. That's the kind of stuff that you remember that sticks with you. And that's the kind of relationship that you can't buy in coaching. I don't care if you get the head job or you don't get the head job. Or I don't care where you're coaching, if you're coaching at Fellowship Christian or Arkansas State or Florida or wherever. That's what coaching is all about. And some of these guys are not getting to have that.
great to hear all the stories that we've been able to talk about today. I know we could tell a million more, but thanks for joining us and have a Merry Christmas.
Hey, thank you very much. What a blessing this has been. Great to revive some of those memories and talk about some great, great friends. And you two guys really treated me well there. And I am very thankful for y'all. I miss y'all. It was good seeing y'all when you guys came to Atlanta a few weeks ago. But yeah. I look forward to seeing you again, and I'll be watching the Red Wolves on, is it Wednesday night?
Thursday night.
You know what? That was a lot earlier than we played. We played in the middle of January. They're playing in the middle of December.
All those times you won that game, it was the night before the national championship game.
Yeah, I know it. Late, but great. Hey, guys, it was really a blast for me, and thank you for having me, and thanks for all the kindness throughout the years.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T, club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Men's basketball opening up Sunbelt Conference play on Saturday against Coastal Carolina. A dominating performance. We trailed 4-0. About 2.5 minutes into the game, I hope Coastal Carolina enjoyed it, because we went on a 15-0 run after that. Controlled it the entire way. Up 53-22 at the half. Go on to win it 97-67. And it was a fun Saturday because, look, it's the holidays. There's a ton of stuff going on. And for us to have over 5,000 at First National Bank Arena for that game, I thought was fantastic.
It's exciting. Yeah, I thought the crowd was great. You know, not to kind of go past the game and look ahead. I understand there are parts of, you know, the Sun Belt schedule Coach Hodson doesn't like. And, I mean, I don't know why teams keep getting sent out on four-game road trips and then have four-game home swings and this and that. I don't know. But from my standpoint, specifically for my little part of the world, there's an upside to this upcoming four-game homestand, because it meant Saturday against Coastal Carolina was the only game for the men where the students were really completely gone. Now, they were mostly gone last time out, but there were still some students there. This was the only one that we're going to have to get through where they were just flat out gone. And to see that kind of crowd respond, you know, kind of help pick up where the students not being there, and to think about, you know, to kind of spin this thing forward and think, man, if this team can keep that momentum in this four-game road swing, by the time they get back on the 16th and the Cajuns come in here, the students are back. It kind of gets me excited to think about what that place might look like.
As far as the game itself, it was the coming out party for the true freshman, Josh Hill, the top-rated recruit in school history, and kind of speaks to the depth of this team, because Josh hadn't played in 4 games. Finally, he gets his turn, and man, did he take advantage. He played 15 minutes off the bench, and Josh Hill scored 26 points. He was 6 of 12 from 3, and you hear that term instant offense? We may have to come up with a new term for Josh, because he lit it up in a way that I don't think many people have seen before, especially from a guy that's 6'11", true freshman, coming in off the bench and doing what he did. It was really, really fun to watch.
Well, and, you know, the interesting thing is what kind of brings that about. You got the preseason player of the year in the league over there in a boot.
Yep.
It really, as you said, it is the next guy up. And the truth is, I only get to watch a game in kind of little bitty bits and pieces. I don't get to sit and just watch what's happening. I catch it kind of when I can. I know one time I look up and the score is Josh Hill 18, Coastal Carolina 18. And like, what in the world is going on out here? It was definitely quite a coming out party.
Joseph Pinion with a good performance in that one. He had 19 points, 5 boards, 3 steals. Didn't turn it over. Taron Todd with another good performance. And by the way, after we recorded the show last week, of course, it came out that Taron was Sun Belt Player of the Week. But I thought it was so cool that Taron was Arkansas State's first ever National Player of the Week. And he was certainly deserving of that after his performances against UTA and UAB. But another solid performance for him with 13 points, 5 boards, and 6 assists. It was great to see Darian Ford back healthy again and in the starting lineup. He had 11 points. And then I thought Terrence Ford had one of the more unique stat lines that you'll ever see. He played 19 minutes and didn't attempt a shot, but he had 11 assists, which were a career high, and he also had 3 steals. And when it was all said and done, the Red Wolves were able to win the Sun Belt Conference opener. They also picked up their 10th win before Christmas, and it's the first time in program history that that's happened. So 10-3 start, and certainly this team deserves to have a very good Christmas for the way they played to this point. And hey, 12 days in between games now, so the players and coaches with a little time to spend with their families before getting back into the rest of conference play.
Yeah, it's been kind of the difference between one of the differences between the men and the women's schedule, kind of the way that first week of conference play shook out. So yeah, they get a good break, then 4 in a row as we mentioned. But then you know, it's not too early for everybody to make sure you listen to this. You got your calendar marked for January 16th to be back at the bank.
Yeah. Of course, they'll return to play on the road against Old Dominion on January 2nd, and we'll talk about that next week. The women's team finally played a couple of home games.
Yeah.
This past week. They had played, 6 of the first 8 away from home. And they fell to Tarleton State Thursday, 78-68, and really got themselves in a big hole early on in that game. They were down 24-8 after the first quarter and kind of were playing catch-up the rest of the way.
That's the story of the game. It was a pretty even game after the first quarter. I think it was 0-0 for 41 seconds, and Tarleton State led the rest of the way. Got within 7 at one point in the third quarter. I mean, or with still plenty of time, but just Tarleton State, to its credit, did enough to kind of hold off every little push you made at them.
And then on Sunday, it was good to see the Red Wolves bounce back. They beat Delta State 68-45. Kennedy Montu leading the way with 15 points in that one. But, you know, we've talked about Coach Dez and the way she's rotating players this year. But, you know, she's kind of stuck to that plan. And what I thought was interesting, when you just look at a box score from that game, the 9 players that played, nobody played less than 19 minutes in that game. So, yeah, all 9 players played at least 19 minutes. Nobody played more than 30, but very balanced effort in that win. They're now 4-6 on the season, and they'll open up conference play coming up Sunday at 1 as they travel to take on Appalachian State.
And it depends. Like, they've got 10 kind of available. The 10th is the big kid, which Nisa Sam Grant, which kind of depends on the opponent and the situation, how Dez uses her. But so she had the starting 5 Sunday, and within 90 seconds of the game getting started, the other 4 were standing at the scores table. They've built their rotations to go on there about every 2 minutes. They're putting a new wave of folks in there. And they were glad, I'm sure, thrilled to have Kristalyn Rose back. She'd missed a couple games in concussion protocol. She was back Sunday against a feisty, scrappy little Delta State team, which is exactly what I expected. You know, they're coached by Tracy Stewart Lang, who was the head coach at Lyon College for 17 years. Delta State's got a ton of history in women's basketball, And then, you know, some players with local ties. They had a kid from Nettleton, Wakiria Daniels, who was playing on that team. And then, one of their starters was Darren Toney's kid. You know, Darren played football here, defensive back, and ran track and played in the CFL. Yeah, his kid was one of the starters in that game Sunday.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And he was at the game, too. And so it's always cool to see connections like that. a lot of ties, kind of ties to the area and to Arkansas State in that game Sunday. And you know, good performance to just hold off a team that just kind of refused to be blown out, to be honest with you.
We'll wrap things up with football. Of course, the big matchup coming up on Thursday, the Red Wolves taking on Bowling Green at the 68 Ventures Bowl in Mobile. Like the Red Wolves, Bowling Green comes into this game with a record of 7-5, but this is a really good football team we're playing. Yeah, they've lost five games. Two of those five losses were to Penn State and Texas A&M, and both of them were one-score games. So they played right with two of the better teams in the country, and we've learned a lot about their tight end leading up to this game. Harold Fannin Jr., a first-team consensus All-American, and obviously you got to try to slow him down. But Bowling Green's defense, very good as well. They're top 25 in the nation in scoring defense. But, hey, let's go out and get an eighth win.
Yeah.
That'd be great to see. Great to see for the senior class. And, you know, we mentioned one-score games. This A-State team, if they can keep it close, we know they can win those one-score games. They were 6-1 in the regular season in those.
And a lot of times these bowl games come down to connectivity.
Who wants to be there?
Who wants to be there the most? I mean, it's not as simple as that, but sometimes that goes a long way in determining who plays well in a bowl game. The team that wants to be there the most. You know, I like our coaching staff and our roster's chances of coming out and looking like that team, looking like the team who wants to be there more.
And I asked Butch Jones when we met on Saturday how the practices have been, and he's always really honest about that. And he said, you know, they've been really, really good. And it's been a good week overall for, I say good week, good several weeks for this A-State football program. Not only did they have a great high school signing class, the 25 that we signed back in that first Wednesday of the month, 23 being high school, two junior college guys, but it's been a really good last week or so in the portal as well. And Coach Jones will tell you, this late bowl game has actually been an advantage for them, with a lot of the teams in our league playing earlier, to be able to kind of get these recruits that have visited on the back end has been good for us. And I think our fans are really going to like the guys that have been brought in.
There have probably been some instances where you're seeing guys visiting, committing, and maybe even signing sometimes on the same day, if not.
Oh, it's happening. Yeah.
To kind of be on the back end of that, as he says, to be the last thing they see and be the last impression is to look at those facilities and see what's going on. And then, yeah, they're saying, where do I sign? And it's kind of all getting done and one-stop shopping.
Again, 8 o'clock the kick on the radio side. We'll get things started across the network at 6 o'clock. You can watch on ESPN, but make sure you sync us up on the radio side as well. And really, really looking forward to seeing how our guys do in Mobile. And I know they're going to be fired up when they take that field. That Old Dominion game left a bad taste in their mouth. They're ready to end it on a good note.
Yeah, and so hopefully, depending on when you've listened to this, we'll wish you a Merry Christmas. If you hear this, it comes out on Christmas Eve. And if you have listened to it before Christmas or before Thursday, you're headed to Mobile. We hope to see you there, but also remind you, a great way to pass the time of a long road trip is to go back and listen to any past episodes, past interviews you might have missed.
I remember we were at, where were we? It was the Sun Belt basketball tournament in Pensacola, and I had a couple of fans come up and say, we listened to Second to None podcast episodes all the way down to Pensacola.
And we had the same conversation with people even last year in Montgomery at the bowl game, listened to episodes on the way down, so appreciate that. I think great way to catch up. And I want to shout out, and man, I've been looking, even while we're sitting here talking, I've been trying to find where he is, and I don't have it yet. So somebody who already knows can tweet us or whatever. But I do want to shout out, DeWarrick Spencer is still playing professional basketball. He's into his early 40s, and last week he had an 87-point game.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, big shout out. We need to get him on soon.
We do.
Well, here's how long.
Dude's got stories to tell now.
His last year was the year before I got here. So I've been here 20 years. I guess he's going on 21 years in the professional ranks.
Yeah. I think maybe he's 42, something like that, and still playing. He's played all over the world and really had a really good career. He's not one of those guys just kind of won't let go. He's had a heck of an international career. And it will be really, really interesting to get him on here and hear some of those tales sometime soon.
It's been a great episode. Thanks so much to our good friend John Thompson joining us. We thought it'd be a timely visit with the bowl trip to Mobile this week, and appreciate his candidness because there's a lot of things we love about JT, but that's right there near the top of the list. He just always so open and honest, and we can talk about that kind of stuff, and I know we brought it up with him. He was such a special part of Arkansas State football history, A-State history, period. But I don't know of anybody who around our fan base thinks anything but great things when looking back at Coach Thompson in those years.
First-class guy. And I knew the reason I was not unwilling to ask those questions. I knew he was going to be candid, but still do it in a first-class way. And enough times passed that people that around want to kind of know, hey, how close did that come to happening? Because, I mean, there were a lot of people that would have been A-OK with John Thompson being the head coach of the Red Wolves.
Thanks to everybody for listening. We always appreciate you doing that. And be safe on the road, wherever you're going, hopefully to Mobile and back. On behalf of Brad, I'm Matt. Have a very, very Merry Christmas.